Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1, listen to Talk with Marie Live. Get ready for some music, books, social events, and special guests. Here's your host, Marie.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a special edition of Talk with Marie. Today, we are featuring Mothers in Charge. I'm going to be interviewing the executive director and founder, Dorothy Johnson Spite. And they've been doing so many amazing work in Philadelphia. I thought it was about time that she come and share her story with all of us on the show. Welcome, Dorothy.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Marie.
I'm so glad you could join me this morning. I wanted to start, I've been reading so much about your work. I thought I learned everything, and then I was seeing, this has been such an amazing year for you. I saw so many recognition, you even met the Pope. So talk to us about what's been happening this year. I mean, I think your work has been really been doing so much all over the country, not just in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it has been an amazing time. Sometimes when I look back, I'm just blown away myself, to be honest with you. As you mentioned, yeah, I had the honor and the special privilege of meeting the Pope when he was in Philadelphia. I sit on the Philadelphia Prison Board as a trustee since 2008, and when we got the word from the commissioner that the Pope was coming, we were all so excited. He had selected one of the Philadelphia prisons to come and meet with the inmates and bring them a message. So I wasn't sure I was going to get a chance to actually meet him face-to-face, but would work out. It happened that way. I actually had a chance to talk with him. I asked him for special prayer for the families that we work with who've lost children and loved ones to violence, and talked a little bit about the violence in Philadelphia and around the country and the world, actually. And asked him to say a prayer, and he did. I was able to give him a copy. We have a book that we published a few years back called Mothers in Charge, Faces of Courage. And it's a book of about 25 moms in our organization and their stories. And I actually was able to give him an autographed copy of our book as well. So it was an amazing, amazing meet and opportunity, yes.
Yeah,
I'm still blown away by it.
Yeah, that's going to be a great something to always remember. Let's go back to the beginning, because I didn't learn about your organization until probably a few months ago, and I was reading, and I was really touched that you were able to share your story and actually turn your pain into something so, you know, powerful, and being able to use that to help others, to cope and really sort of deal with the same tragedy in their lives. So tell us how Mothers in Charge came about and its mission.
Okay. Mothers in Charge, first of all, is a group of mothers, grandmothers, aunts, sisters, wives, women who have lost a son, daughter, or loved one to violence. And I started the organization in May of 2003 in Philadelphia at a small church. Prior to that, and what prompted me to start the organization was that my 24-year-old son, colleague Jabbar Johnson, was killed, shot to death over a parking space. Actually, December 6th in 2001, so this, of course, is a rough time of the year for me. But initially, I wanted to die. I didn't think I would survive colleague's death. Colleague was actually the second child that I lost. My daughter, Carlina, was 2.5, and she died about 15 years prior to colleague's murder of bacterial meningitis. So just as I was kind of finding my way back, colleague was shot 7 times over a parking space. So wasn't thinking I was going to be able to survive his death and go through it again. But at some point, and it was somewhere down the road after I guess I had sunken to my most worst place ever in my life, I had a vision and decided that I wasn't going to allow the person who murdered colleague to claim both our lives. And I decided I was going to take my anger and my pain and my tears and everything that I felt and do something positive with that. And that's how Mothers in Charge was started.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm sure you hear from so many others, and sharing your own with each other sort of provides some comfort. I think it's one of those things it's never going to really leave you. It's always there, regardless of how many years have gone by.
That's true. And especially, I think, for those who've lost loved ones, they know that the anniversary dates and the birthday dates and things like that are really a rough time of the year. Holidays that are approaching now are a rough time of the year. And it's not anything that ever goes away. It's not like a cold that goes away. It's something that you are forever, I think. And I've spoken to folks who've lost loved ones to violence, especially because that's a traumatic kind of loss, 20, 30 years. And they say that there's still days, believe it or not, that it feels like it was yesterday. Now, of course, those periods and those days aren't as long, as intense as they were in the beginning, but they are still, you know, very difficult times to cope and to move through life, you know. It's always a challenge learning how to live with the pain and the grief and the loss.
True. So one of the other pieces I read, I was learning about all your programs and all the amazing women that are part of the organization, but also there's a lot of information about homicide and violence. And one of the facts that I saw was about how the rate of homicide in Philly and other areas that are considered friendlier have been increasing. So I know in a lot of communities, including my own, we wake up and go to sleep to news of violence. I wanted to ask you, based on your lived experiences, what are some of the systemic conditions you think have contributed to this continuing surge of violence everywhere now? Which is really big.
And I will say that. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
And I will say that actually this year homicides, you know, for this last, 10, 11, 12 months, has spiked in most urban cities across the country. And you ask, like, what is the cause? And that's a question that I'm always asked and that I always ask. Difficult question, because violence is such a complex issue. There's no one thing that causes it, you know, and I guess if it was, it would be easier to kind of figure out and wrap our minds around what to do about it. But because it's such a complex issue, because so many things contribute to it, everything from, you know, poor education to individuals lacking tools for communication, poverty, you know, there's so the availability of so many guns in our communities. So there's so many things that contribute to it. There's no one thing. I think what we need to identify is that it's a major health epidemic, and I think that's the way it needs to be addressed. That homicide is the leading cause of death among African American males 14 to 34. And that's the leading cause of death. So it's a health epidemic. So it needs to be treated that way. And so when you think of other health epidemics, maybe Ebola or different things that have, you know, taken this country, you know, by storm in terms of a medical concern, then it's treated that way. So, for instance, Ebola, you think about that and you think about, you know, the millions of dollars that went in to stop the spread of it by vaccines, and, you know, those, you remember seeing those guys, those doctors and men and women in those suits to stop the spread. That's the way homicide needs to be addressed, because it's the leading cause of death. So we don't need vaccinations or vaccines or anything like that, but we do need better educational programs. We need conflict resolution. We need anger management, because a lot of the violence that we see in urban communities has to do with conflict, you know, and all of those kinds of things that contribute to that. So if we had mentoring programs and strong educational programs, you know, those are the things that I believe would address the issue of violence in many of our cities. And, of course, there's too many guns, so that's another piece that, you know, we have to begin to look at. Like, you know, a 13-year-old should not be able to get his hands on a gun before he does a textbook. So there's something real wrong with that. And those are the kind of things I think that we need to address. And trauma. We can't leave out the trauma. And those that are victims oftentimes are not seen as victims. Those folks, many times, who have been traumatized are not seen as victims of trauma and their behaviors contributing to the violence. So those are some of the things I think that we need to begin to look at closely and start thinking of things that we can do that are different, you know, especially with the trauma piece. That's so very, very important.
Yeah, I mean, I do recognize it's a very complex issue, but I think for some people, it's hard to even remove that from their minds. Like just yesterday, there was an incident in Boston right in front of two high school where students were hearing gunshots, and it felt like it was inside the school, but it was outside or across the buildings of the school. And so in a way, it's almost like you can't remove it from your day-to-day, which is really a very sad sort of reality, I think, in a way, because you live it and then you watch it on TV and you literally sort of immerse in that, in it that way. So the reason I even asked you that question is because as I was reading, seeing all the different programs you have, I feel like in a way, even though you ask that question, your programs are addressing all the pieces you mentioned. And so that lead me to some of the initiative and programs through MIC in terms of talking about mentoring, which is a big component. Can you tell us about the 1,000 Women and 1,000 Girls Mentorship Program?
Sure. And while, let me just say this too, while Mothers in Charge, our focus is to support families who've been affected by violence, a large part of what we do has to do with prevention and intervention, which is why we do the programs. You know, I remember the first time there was talk of Mothers in Charge going to the prison to talk to juveniles. You know, some mothers, like, could not get that, could not wrap their mind around that. Like, why would you be going to a prison? Like, they could not do that because they thought, and one said to me, I don't know if I'm talking to the person who murdered my son. You know, I can't do that, and I understand that. And there was a time when I couldn't wrap my own mind around that. Like, you know, but there's something that we say that they're all our sons, you know, and we've got to find a way to address what is happening in our community. So it's a community piece that the community needs to be involved in. The 1,000 Women for 1,000 Girls was an initiative that we had around our anniversary date about 4 years ago now. And it was a way to identify women in the community that could address the increase in violence that we were seeing among our young girls. So there's often a lot of talk about young men and violence, but we all have seen an increase in the number of violent incidents with females, the female population. And I remember seeing a young lady who we had been working with at one of the schools, at the female prison that I'm on the board for. And she was there charged as an adult because of the type of crime she was involved in. And I said to myself then, you know, while we're working with them in the schools, we've got to find ways to continue to connect with them after those hours. And how do we begin to really mentor and pour into their lives? You know, a lot of these young girls are coming from situations where, you know, they don't have the support, you know, to make the right choices and things like that, because a lot of them are in situations, and we work very closely with a facility called Carson Valley School, which is a residential facility where girls go and are oftentimes court adjudicated there because of, you know, not attending school or some, you know, relative charges, or maybe sometimes just even not having someone to care for them. So the work that we were doing was to address especially that population of young girls, realizing that if we could maybe reach them before they got to, before they were incarcerated or serious charges, that we could help to save their lives. So 1,000 Women for 1,000 Girls is still going on, and we were successful in identifying that number of women who signed up through a service that we had where they would actually mentor, if no more than, you know, to have a phone, a pen pal, ways that connect on whatever level they were comfortable with the young girls that we identified in our programs and through the Department of Human Services programs.
That's great. I mean, that's an area that of interest to me. And so I was surprise to have it, because a lot of time when you focus on some like one issue, I think we forget sort of the other components of it. And so I find your organization just sort of includes so many different ways to engage the community and build community in terms of, and then generationally. So not just the mothers, but you also have younger, you can have youth, you can have people of different ages come together because, you know, they're all affected in some ways, and then build that relationship within the organization. And then the other piece I find intriguing was the, I think it's Manosita Art Mentoring, which I thought was also another great element. How did that come about?
As you mentioned, to engage the community, and we do that. That's one of the things we look forward to doing. And that's all communities, whether they've been impacted by violence or not. So Mamacita is a art group of suburban moms who have become our partners in this work. And what they do is that we have grief support every Thursday at our office. And one Thursday a month, the first Thursday of each month, Mamacita comes and does something that's kind of like non-traditional kind of grief support. In other words, it's grief support through art. So the mothers are able to still do their group and still share and talk about, you know, their feelings and what they're dealing with around, you know, all kinds of emotions that are related to the death of their son or daughter or loved one. But while doing so, Mamacita is instructing them on art projects. So they do everything. Like this month they'll be doing, you know, ornaments for the tree, you know, for Christmas, for the holiday. They'll do things around Mother's Day. Depending on the season, Mamacita, which is a wonderful group of women with all kind of artistic abilities, some of which I have none, but they do the work with the mothers who come on Thursday evenings. And it's they enjoy it. They all look forward to the first Thursday of each month when the group comes.
That's great. So this week is going to be probably the last one for the year. That's happening. So, you know, we've been talking, I mean, again, all the great work you've been doing the whole year, or even all the years you've been in existence. And so the big part of our conversation is going to be about organizational change. And so a lot of time when I'm thinking a group is doing so well and things are going great, I'm thinking, why change? You know, because you hear people say, if it's not broken, don't fix it. So it's sort of hard to think about, but I imagine you do want to make some changes within the organization. So do you want to talk a little bit about what type of changes you would want to make in the next, whether it's the next few months or the next 2 years with Mothers in Charge?
Well,
or at least one, I'm sure.
Sure. And change is so important, and it's something that we can all be sure that's going to take place, whether we like the change sometimes or not. And social change is really big. I mean, social change has to do with relationships and people and community. And so while we're focusing on violence prevention and all of that, social change has to happen because there are a lot of times there are systems and things in place that need to be changed, you know, based on the conditions of community and things like that. So, and let me just say this too, that none of this happens, you know, in Mothers in Charge without a courageous group of mothers and grandmothers and aunts and sisters who make up this organization. They all contribute in some way to the work of Mothers in Charge. And that's so empowering for them. In other words, here's a mom who's lost a son or daughter to violence, and she comes to Mothers in Charge and she gets, you know, the grief support and the peer support and all of that until she gets stronger, you know, and works through some of the issues of grief. Then she wants to take that strength that she's gained and create some change. And oftentimes it's change in memory of a son or daughter or loved one. So the change is important for a lot of the folks who come to Mothers in Charge because it's a way of healing, but it's also a way of saying, my loved one's death was not in vain, that I've taken this terrible tragedy, this awful thing that has happened in my life, and I've used it to create something that will make our community a better place. So that's the importance of the social change. And as mothers, my mayor said it best, I guess, we have a moral authority, like as mothers giving, you know, having given birth and all of that to children. And there's something special about women and the power that we have. Oftentimes we don't know about that power, or we haven't been able to identify that power. So the social change that I want to create and that I'm working to create has to do with educating and healing first, and then empowering women like myself who've lost, through a tragic set of circumstances, a significant person in my life, my son, in my case, it's my son. And how do I use that to create a change in my community that will make it a safer place, a better place, a improved quality of life for those that I live with in that community? So that's what my social change is. My social change is to travel to some of the places that are experiencing high rates and increase in violence, especially homicide, not just violence, but homicides, and connecting with those women and helping them to heal and understanding the trauma of their experience and all of that, but also helping them to understand that part of the healing is going to be your ability to create change. It's happened for me, and it's happened to so many folks who I've seen over the last 13 years within my organization. And I know that it can work across the country to create a domino effect in many of these communities with many of these families and these individual, and especially these women who have suffered tremendous loss.
Okay, I see. So this will be not sort of a one, this is going to be sort of on a continuum, sort of ongoing as part of the, you know, pretty much part of the culture of the organization to sort of embed change, you know, throughout your process.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because I think sometimes people, yeah, because a lot of time when we think of change, it's almost like something we do sort of like one time we make a change and then we don't get to think about it. But I guess long term and really sort of, and the type of work you do, it's so systemic. It's not something you sort of like, oh, it's over, we can check it off the list. It's going to be ongoing, sort of beyond, you know, sort of one day or a period or a season even in terms of making it lasting. So I wanted to ask,
well, you know, we always say that we hope that one day we will be out of business. So, of course, the change is to create safer communities. And maybe, you know, one day maybe I will not be around to see it, but maybe one day we won't be talking about 200-plus murders in the city of Philadelphia or Chicago or California, you know, San Francisco, Oakland. Maybe one day we won't be talking about that. And maybe the work of Mothers in Charge will then be, you know, something else that we're doing to create the changes that we need to see. But right now, you know, until those issues of violence and homicides are addressed, and that's what we plan to do, we can't really talk about anything else. We've got to focus in on that.
So if people are interested in learning more about your work, because I know there's always programs happening throughout the year, where can they go to get more information?
Well, they can, of course, visit our website, and that's mothersincharge.org. And we're located in Philadelphia headquarters, but we have 10 chapters throughout the country. And so those chapters are listed on our website. So if there's someone in a particular area, someone in your listening audience in a particular area, that they could connect with a chapter near them, or if they're interested in this work, if they're interested in learning more about the social change that we're working to create, they can reach out to us, you know, at our national headquarters in Philadelphia.
That's great. So thank you. I want to thank you, Dorothy, for being on the program. And then I'm hoping to learn more because, again, this is something that's going to be, you know, it's something that's ongoing, as we mentioned. And so there's always more to learn and hoping to learn from each other. So I think a lot of organizations who may not necessarily be in the similar type of work, I think we can learn from each other in terms of how to make that change, regardless of the social issues or change that we all working on. So I see collaboration is also like a big part of your organization. Yeah.
That is key, Maria. We must find ways to come together, you know, across these different social issues and work together and collaborate together, because no one organization can do it alone. So collaboration has got to be, you know, got to be the key. And my website, just so I wanted to also say that my website is mothersincharge.org.
That was great. Again, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you.
And we're going to stay in touch and have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you, and same to you, Marie. Thank you for.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. So you learn about Mothers in Charge, and as you can see, Dorothy is such a super organizer, passionate about the work that she does. Dorothy Johnson Spite. So go to their website, mothersincharge.org. They're on social media, and make sure to get involved if you're interested in the work that they are doing. Definitely take the leap and contact them and be part of that change she's trying to make.
I'm still blessed and took the strength of it and tried to misuse it. But I can't help but to give God glory today. When I think about all I've been and I still came out on the winning side. I don't know about you, but I know that he favored me because my enemies, they did try. Sing it, y'all. But they couldn't triumph over me. But great is he that is in me than he that's in the world. That's what they did. That's what they did. They told a whole lot of lies. But God saved me. My character.